Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, June 17th, 2013, and you are listening to episode 55. My name is Rob. As usual, I'm hanging out here with Mr. Jason Slingerland, and we're having a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day in Kalamazoo, Michigan. It's a great day to be alive. The world is moving forward, as it tends to do, you know. I lost track of my flow there. I'm not flowing the way that I would like to be flowing, but I'm just still talking anyway, and you're not stopping me, and I kind of hope that you would stop me, but you're just gonna sit there and stare at me. And now he's leaning over, not even looking at me. I don't know what he's doing. Now he's looking puzzled and looking a little bit confused. I'm not really sure what to think about this. Say something, dude. I'm dying here.
I was just curious how long you would talk for. That was looking at the timer on
48 seconds
before you finally were like, please talk. Sometimes I feel like you just do this show on your own.
Yeah, maybe I should. All right.
I guess not, because the show would be pretty short.
It would. I would run out of things to say. I need somebody to bounce off of.
Thanks.
Come on. I think we both just made an Arrested Development reference, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen the new episodes yet?
I haven't.
No, I haven't either. See, I'm up to date, of course, to where it cut off before. But Christine is only just barely started season 3. So I'm waiting for her to catch up. So that we can watch together, but I don't think she's going to. She's just going too slow. I don't think I can wait.
Right. We haven't started watching them yet because we were finishing up Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
We've got like four more episodes. I mean, I'm current through season 5.1,
sure.
Which is like 8 episodes. My wife and I are rewatching it together so she can watch it. And there's like 4 episodes left. It starts again in August, so we want to be caught up.
And that's going to be like the last season, right?
Yes, the last 8 episodes. Right. They split season 5 into 2 parts.
Do they? Oh, okay.
A 16 episode season instead of 13 like normal.
Okay.
And then they cut it in half and then showed it like 6 or 7 months apart, I think.
Right on.
So cool. I can't wait because it ends with a huge cliffhanger, which I really want my wife to know what the cliffhanger is. So yeah, we're going to start watching Arrested Development as soon as we finish these few episodes because we really want to. If there's one thing that I hope to see in the episodes, there's only one thing I care about.
Yeah.
Nothing else could happen.
Okay.
But if I get to hear
how can they can't leave that out.
They can't.
Yeah.
Teaching my kid how to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't quite understand the dance yet that Job does, but he'll go, ka, 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 ka. It's pretty awesome.
That's great.
The thing about kids are they're just like these little monkeys. You just teach them to dance.
Right, yeah. Dance, monkey, dance.
Today, I was sitting with my kid, and he was like, he loves iPhones. He loves phones in general, like,
sure,
to hit buttons and stuff. And I hit the button on my phone. He's 15 months old, for people who don't know.
Yeah.
I hit the button on the home key, so it lights up. So he likes to just touch the screen, and nothing's happening, of course, because you have to slide the thing over.
Right.
Well, something happened on the phone, so I slid the thing over, and he's watching me, and I close it back down. He looks down. He hits the home key. It lights up. He swipes his finger across and opens the phone. I'm like, are you kidding me, kid?
So, it's not that hard. I mean,
it's just amazing because kids that are born now, like he's never known a world without an iPhone, without a pocket computer accessible to you all the time.
Yeah, he will never understand a world that didn't have that.
That didn't have instant communication,
right?
You know, and
yeah, it's crazy to think about.
It is, because like I don't really remember a time before computers, because we were, you know, when we were growing up, computers weren't that big of a deal.
No, uh-uh.
Until we got to about high school.
Yeah.
But still, I feel like we've always had them,
mm-hmm.
because
I mean, since I was about, you know, 8 years old, we had a computer of some kind in the house.
Me too.
You know,
I mean, some of them were very basic, or
and maybe even just an Atari,
right?
You know,
yeah. Since I was 8 or 10, we've had some sort of Nintendo system.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that digital stuff, you know, and
right.
Now it's just crazy to think about the fact that
it is wild.
They're just used to that, you know. So
right, think about what it's going to be like when they're our age. Oh man, getting a little misty-eyed. Kind of keeps things in a weird perspective that, you know, we're still talking about tabletop game design in this crazy digital futuristic world. I mean, we live in the future, dude. I get pictures from Mars beamed directly to my phone.
Yeah.
How awesome is that?
Somebody tweeted one time, I don't remember who it was, they were like, "Where's my flying car?"
Yeah.
And they're like, as I tweeted to millions of people around the world instantly from my phone.
Yeah. Right.
I think he said from a computer, I'm holding it in my hand.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is the future. And it's crazy to think about it.
It's amazing.
You know, too, I was listening to this radio show and these people said, if you could have anything from the future, like any future technology, what would you want? And they were like, oh, flying cars. And I was like, what's the, because there's something in my mind. The very first thing that comes to my mind when I think amazing future technology, what do you think?
I would want vacations in outer space.
Okay. That's not what, that was mine. The number one, if you could get any technology, the best time saving, amazing technology, teleporters.
That'd be pretty awesome.
You get teleporters.
Yeah.
It negates like all the issues with, you know, with traveling.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no more road issues.
That'd be pretty
great. You can get up for work and be at work 30 seconds later via a teleporter.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us
shouldn't get to work that quickly, but I get the point. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I would rather not roll out of bed and just immediately be transported to my office.
Well, I think there'd have
no one would like that.
A teleporter door you'd walk into or a little station at your house.
You'd have to, yeah, I guess, yeah.
At first, only rich people would have them because they'd be super expensive.
Right. And, you know, rich people.
And everybody would have.
Oh, those rich people.
I'm so rich, I got a teleporter.
Arr!
Anyways, teleporter. That'd be my most bang for your buck.
I'd rather have a rocket that can take me to the moon, and I can just take a vacation on the moon.
You do realize that if NASA flew to the moon and put a teleporter there, you could get there even faster.
Yeah, well, that would be cool, but I would like the space travel on the way. I mean, that's part of the journey is part of the vacation, you know?
Space travel would be easier to have if there was a teleporter on the moon or Mars or Phobos.
Well, what it would be is that you would have the teleporter on a station in orbit around the Earth, so you don't have to deal with the danger of exiting the Earth's gravity and reentry.
Right.
So you teleport from the Earth to an orbital platform, maybe even at the top of a space elevator, for example. I don't know, maybe. Because teleportation is probably really expensive, so they can send your luggage up the space elevator. Meanwhile, of course, you got to send it a couple days in advance. But meanwhile, you then teleport up to the space station, then you get on a rocket that takes you to the moon base.
I'm gonna jump out on a limb here and say that teleporting is not expensive. The units would be expensive, but the actual process of teleporting wouldn't be that hard.
Well, but it's like a plane ticket. I mean, you gotta offset the cost of that teleporter by selling tickets, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know,
but you know,
I'm just saying. Wouldn't you like to try weightlessness? Wouldn't that be great?
You could try that.
I know
you got out the teleporter.
Well, that's cool. But then you have the weightless ride in the spaceship to the moon. It's, you know, if we're this far ahead, it might only be a 2-hour ride to the moon. You know, it's not like it's going to be a 4-day journey like it would be nowadays or however long it is.
I don't know how many it is now.
I think it's several days.
Several days.
It would probably still be several days.
I've watched Apollo 13, dude. I know how it works.
Yeah, right.
Slingshot.
So I'm just saying. Okay. Right. I would like to have vacations in outer space.
I would like that too, but I would like to use a teleporter.
Take a rocket out to Jupiter, you know, like a site, like a cruise. It'd be like a cruise. Like you went on a cruise to Alaska. I want to go on a cruise to Jupiter.
I do too.
I would love that.
But if they put a teleporter on Titan,
then you're just on Titan.
Dude, Titan most Earth-like.
My point
moon
is
in the most Earth-like body in the solar system.
If you're on the rocket and they can just teleport you to the base on Titan, it's like going on daily excursions from your cruise. I'm telling you, it's about the space cruise. That's what I'm talking about.
There's not a lot to see once you get out there.
Well, that's
at least you get up to stuff, and everything's a long ways apart.
You know, there's not a lot to see in the ocean either. That's why you're on a cruise ship with a bunch of stuff to do.
What if you were on a cruise ship on Earth and they teleported you to? Anyways, let's talk about what games we've been playing, huh?
Fine. What you been playing, Jason?
Recently, I played this a while back, too, but I got to play it again recently. The game Zombie Dice. You familiar with that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a wicked simple game. I mean, like, you roll dice, you try to get brains, not shotguns.
Right.
Or runaways, like little feet. I mean, they run away. It's a fun game. I mean, you roll the dice, and it's purely a pressure luck game. I know I've talked about it on the show
it's
before.
It's pretty pure, yeah.
But it's a fun, the time game.
It's great, yeah.
You can teach someone how to play it in less than a minute.
Right.
Somebody could actually just watch you try and play it for like a minute and just they would
get
just
it.
Know how
yeah,
to play
okay,
it.
Okay, fair enough.
It's super
there it
easy.
Is. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a fun game. I mean, it's not super exciting. You know, it's... there's not a lot of strategy involved. It's like, okay, do I want to press my luck or no?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll stop. Oh, I'm going to keep going. Oh, I got shotgunned.
Interesting story about that. That's Steve Jackson, right?
Yeah.
They wanted to try and sell that in Walmart stores, but Walmart didn't want to carry it because of the theme. And so they made, it's the exact same game, but it's about hunting deer.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's selling like hotcakes.
Yep. And it's literally... Stores. The same game.
The exact same game. But instead of coming in a little canister, it comes like a little camouflage pouch.
Yep.
And it's all branded with deer hunting stuff.
And I don't know what the... I mean, the runaway, I assume, is probably deer feet.
Probably.
Probably buck heads are, like, what you want. And then, I don't know, maybe misses or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, what a great idea. And that's actually an interesting thing to talk about, that idea of, you know, that the exact same game with a different theme marketed to the right audience. I mean, it's a perfect example of how important theme really, truly can be.
Right. Well, and Steve Jackson is pretty good at that. When you look at Munchkin, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, even though it's still always targeted at gamers,
right?
They have so many. I mean, they have Munchkin. They have Cthulhu Munchkin, I think. Mm-hmm. They have the Guild Munchkin.
Oh, like, do they
know? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just... So you get people who are like, I'm kind of into games. I've never played Munchkin. Oh, it's the Guild? Oh, I'm going to buy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
It's just genius.
But it also, I mean, so by one measure, it says that the theme is so important to who you're marketing to. But it also kind of at the same time says that theme and mechanics don't necessarily have to have anything at all to do with each other. And they can be completely divorced from one another and still have a successful game. That's it. So that means the mechanics themselves have to be so strong that they can stand on their own.
Right. And I think for certain games... That's really true with not the theme. I mean, the mechanics always have to be strong enough to stand on their own, right?
Yes, yes.
But there are some games where the theme just does not matter.
Right.
The theme is there to make the game feel more fun.
Yeah.
It, you know, and...
Or in this case, it's there just to attract buyers.
Right. It's there to make the game feel approachable.
Right, right.
And make the game sound like a good idea.
Right.
You know, that's... Man, it's really interesting.
It's a weird thing to think about. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have been playing Damsels in Distress.
Hey, I remember that game.
Yeah. I'm sure longtime listeners remember that was the game, one of the first ones that I pitched, and the first one I ever kind of made a full prototype of and had printed. It's what I brought with me to Gen Con last year to kind of try and show off a little bit. Didn't really go anywhere with it. The theme was just a little too... It just wasn't familiar to enough people. It was inspired by Dudley Do-Right.
Right, and the Damsels in Distress idea, totally familiar to people, right?
Yeah.
The Dudley Do-Right thing, less accessible. I mean, that's a good point with the theme, you know what I mean?
Right. I mean, people even of my generation are a little too young to know what Dudley Do-Right is. The only reason I knew is because I grew up loving Rocky and Bullwinkle. So it's really kind of a generation older than me that would be attracted to that.
And the only way that I really remembered, like, oh, Dudley Do-Right, was because you explained it to me.
Yeah, right.
So I got the idea of damsels on a train track and stuff like that. But
yeah, right. So, but I barely touched it since Gen Con last year. It's been sitting on a shelf in a little card case for many, many months. And the other night I was at home and I was just kind of feeling like, yeah, man, I paid for that set, I might as well try it, because I'd done a solo version of the game as well, you know?
Right.
And so let me just give that another try. And man, I really still feel like that's a good game. I'm cool with the way it plays. I really like it. And so on this in conversation of theme here, that's kind of the biggest problem that I had with that game, is that theme just wasn't appealing to anybody.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't, you know, that's so much to do with buying games. Not even buying games, but just getting your attention to look at a game when you walk past it is, what does the artwork look like? Not that your artwork wasn't good. I mean,
the artwork was terrible. But that was just junk that I drew myself. But I'm not a very good artist.
But I'm not saying, like, not just the quality level of the artwork.
No, it's the actual...
The type of artwork, the theme of the artwork, you know? I mean, so...
The theme, yeah, right. The presentation. And it was, you know... It was a simple game. It's still a simple game, and I think it, as you play, the fun of it kind of emerges as you play. It's not obvious up front. Some of the strategies, it only comes towards the end of the game when you realize, when it kind of occurs to you what you've been doing, and oh, okay, and the next time you play, you're a little better prepared for it.
Well, the good news is it's a pretty fast game, so...
Yeah.
When your second play probably happens the same night as your first play.
Probably.
And it's way more fun the second time, for sure, because at first you're kind of like, well, what's the strategy in this? And it's a game where you kind of need to develop your own personal strategy based on...
A little bit, yeah.
How you like to spend the cards, you know?
Yeah. But at any rate, it was fun to go back to it and try it again. You know, I've been thinking a lot about it lately since playing that, and I think I want to try and do a little bit more with it. If nothing else, maybe just do a print and play, you know?
Yeah.
And just put it out there and let people try it. You know, I'm not really sure yet. I'm still thinking about it. So we'll see what happens with it. But I mean, if there's anybody out there who's interested in trying Damsels in Distress, let us know, you know, send us an email, and tell me what you think. Tell me if you have any interest or whatever. Or if you're a Dudley Do-Right fan like me, just let me know.
No emails about that.
It'd be nice to know if anybody else out there even gives a crap about that fantastic old cartoon.
There are tons of people that do, but they are not on the internet. Nor do they listen to podcasts.
They're old people.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So there you go. Anyway, why don't we go ahead and talk about a mechanic this week?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, what you got?
So this is in honor of us being terrible at giving like straight up mechanics.
Yeah,
We're actually going to talk about the opposite of a mechanic this week. Like, I want to talk about. No, we're going to talk about a mechanic, but we're going to talk about mechanics, plural. So there are a lot of games where the win condition involves having the most points. So instead of talking about that can be our mechanic.
Okay.
But let's talk about games that don't have that.
Ooh.
That's kind of a standard win condition, right? For a lot of games. I mean,
high score wins.
Off the top of my head, there's Catan, Carcassonne, right?
Yeah.
Same way. Mm-hmm. Stone Age, same way. I mean, those are pretty standard games. But I mean, just a lot of games in general. So let's think about ones where that's not the case.
Okay.
Some obvious examples come to mind. Games where player elimination is the winning factor.
Yeah.
That's a pretty easy one. A risk, right. That type of thing. Doesn't matter how many points you have. Matters. Well, no, granted, risk legacy probably does matter. But in the end of the game, it's about player elimination. Right. You know, a game like Monopoly kind of crosses both lines because it is about points, as in money.
You want to get really the most points, but by getting the most points, you're taking it away from other people.
Right. It's really player elimination.
Yeah, it is.
To me, a game with points is a game where there is no cap on the number of points you can earn. It's not like you're playing to a certain number. It's, I can earn as many points as I want, and when I hit that total, I mean, when I, you know, at the end of the game, we're going to sum up those points. Mm-hmm. There's no goal. The goal is to have the most.
Yeah.
So, other win conditions you can think of where that's the case.
Let's see. Well, Sentinels of the Multiverse, the goal is to kill the bad guy. You know, you don't want to get points. You're just trying to kill the villain, right? Right.
So that's actually enemy elimination.
Right.
There's player elimination in that game, but that has nothing to do with the win condition.
But then again, you kill the bad guy by taking down his hit points. So
That's different, though. That is different.
It's trying to... Well, it's still kind of trying to rack up points. It's just kind of trying to rack down points. So maybe that doesn't really count.
It's like golf scoring, kind of.
Yeah, well, but you know, you start at a high score and you're trying to get the lower the score down to zero. Right. I don't know. That's kind of a gray area there.
Right. Ticket to Ride, the game you've talked about a lot.
That's totally all about points. Yep. All about points. Yeah. Well, you're the game you pitched last week, which your Sandbox Showdown thing. You were fighting with that. Idea of is it about area control or is it about the total score at the end.
And I still don't have enough input to determine whether that's the case. Yeah. But that's kind of a turning point in the game, right?
Right.
Is it purely about the end game is area control? What can I control?
Yeah.
You know, a game that doesn't involve points but involves area control, kind of, and running out of pieces, is Blockus. I've talked about that before. It's a standard board game.
Yeah.
The win condition is first person who plays the... Well, see, it's funny because at the end of the game, it's basically whoever has the lowest score, because in the end, if there's tiles left, you're going to count how many dots you have on your tiles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like points, but it's not. It's not about having more or less points. It's about playing the most tiles. But then again, if I play the most tiles, but I only have two tiles left and everyone else has four, but I have my two biggest tiles left, I'm going to lose because of points.
Yeah.
So, it's sneaky how many points are just shoved into games there.
Chess. There you go. Chess is kind of the ultimate of that.
Right.
I mean, that's purely player elimination, of course.
Checkers.
Well, you could think of, trying to get rid of all the other guys' checkers, right? That's kind of like trying to rack up a score.
Well, it's like player elimination.
Yeah, well, but chess is player elimination, and you're not just taking pieces. You're trying to target one specific piece.
That is true.
You know,
that is, whereas, there's no way to confuse chess with points.
Right, not at all. But checkers, you could kind of boil it down to a point system.
Now, in a tournament system, though, points are used with chess, aren't they? Like, with
when you win a game,
it's worth so many points.
And, I don't know.
So, but standard game of chess, points don't matter.
Right. Well, you know, there's a game like role-playing games, for example, that's kind of story-based and achievement-based things, you know? Mansions of Madness was that way. You're not scoring points. You're trying to achieve goals.
Yep. Well, there was... we played that... I was just going to say... First, I was going to say something else, and I was like, oh, Wasabi! You have to make the menus, but you get points out of that. So, nope. I was thinking about... we played that Kill the Overlord game. We just demoed it. We did. To be honest, we weren't really big fans of it.
No.
And I don't know if it was a bad demo or if it just wasn't a good game, but...
That was supposed to be Last Man Standing, though, I think. It was player elimination, wasn't it?
Right, but I mean, there was no points involved in that. You were... I mean, I know you want to say hit points, but I feel like hit points and points are a different mechanic.
We've talked before about that Alcatraz, the scapegoat game that I didn't really care for, but again, maybe just had a bad demo. And that was more about trying to get off the island and not about points. So I think what we're kind of breaking down here is kind of point or goal, you know? Do you want to, you know,
that's a good way to
achieve a certain score, or do you have a specific target you're trying to reach?
Right, and if that target could involve some sort of point system, whether it's hit points or complete and total domination elimination.
Yeah.
But really, the purpose of the game is the goal. You know what I mean? Another way to look at that, too, is what causes the game to end. For instance, in Risk, the game ends because you've eliminated your opponents.
Yeah.
So you have amassed more armies, a.k.a. points than them, but the game ends not because of points, but because of... But then again, a game like Stone Age, that's obviously about points, right? 100% about points. At the end of the game ends when you run out of cards, basically, or one out of one or two stacks of cards. Now, Settlers of Catan, that is... The goal is to earn 10 points. I was thinking of the way we play with four players, but the goal is to get 10 points. So, yeah.
Tyrannosaur Attack. That's a game that starts out being all about points and ends by being the first one to escape the pan-dimensional time warp.
Right. And if anybody's not familiar, Tyrannosaur Attack is a game Rob pitched. It's not a real game that's out yet.
It could be a real game.
Could be someday.
If somebody out there wants to publish it.
With a giant Tyrannosaur figure.
A giant plastic Tyrannosaur.
Yep.
I think it would be great.
All it's going to do is take space up on the board.
That's all it has to do.
To hear that, that's about our last conversation from our last show where we talked about miniatures. That's not like a miniature. That's like a maxature, though, because it'd be big.
Yeah. It bigature? Isn't that the phrase from Lord of the Rings? The bigatures? Instead of miniatures, bigatures? Really, really big miniatures?
Really? Is that what they call it?
Yeah. That was in all the special features in the Lord of the Rings movies.
I don't watch special features that often.
Yes, you do. Don't you?
No, not very
How are
often.
You not? How are you, my friend?
I just don't. I'd rather watch the movie. Sometimes I'll watch special features, but that's not like my... Like, you watch a movie and then you watch the special features.
Yeah, it's fun.
In fact, this is my favorite thing about you, is you'll watch a movie and say, the movie wasn't very good, and the special features weren't very good either. And I'm like, why did you watch the special features if the movie wasn't good?
Because I'm interested.
I don't got that kind of time.
All right, anyway.
So I do think that you've cracked it kind of there where the is it a goal or is it about achieving a goal that does not have to do with points, or is it about points? Like earning points or achieving a goal.
Okay. So this is kind of a broad idea here. So normally at this phase we would try and kind of come up with a game idea that implements this mechanic. But this is such a kind of a big concept here that it's a little tougher.
Actually, it's not tough. It's way too easy because think of a game where the goal is to do something that doesn't have to do with points.
Yeah, I guess that's my point, that it's so easy that it's kind of tough for us to try and come up with a new idea that might approach this in a different way.
Formula Day. That's just a race, right? Mm-hmm. Winner takes all.
First one across the
finish
line. So
there's no point system there.
Yeah.
That's it. I hate that game. I know you love it.
I love it. Well, Formula D is what I have. Formula Day is the European version, I guess.
Okay.
Well, because in French, D is day.
Yeah, but what's the difference?
Yeah, I don't know. I think
it's
the same
French,
game.
I'm actually surprised there's not like a T on the end or an X or something that you don't pronounce.
Okay.
I'm not making fun of French people. I'm just pointing out your language has a lot of useless letters at the end.
Frenchies.
Save yourself some time and just get rid of those letters.
So to all of our French listeners out there, Jason hates you.
I don't hate you. I'm not a big fan of extra letters. I like to write less letters.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I like Formula D, but no one will ever play it with me.
Yeah, because nobody else likes it.
And it makes me sad. Lots of people out there like it. It's just that none of my friends like it.
None of
my friends have the patience for it.
I bet you, if we took a poll, that is one of the most common games that people like that no one will play with them. Because someone likes it, and then none of their friends like it.
At this year at Gen Con, I want to play Formula D with somebody. Doggone it.
Not me.
Somebody other than Jason. So if anybody out there listening wants to play Formula D with me, Rob, host of Building the Game, a documentary podcast, then let us know. Let me know. I will play Formula D with you, and I will love it. You know what? I've never, ever played more than a single lap race of that game because no one will ever play with me. Because
it's not fun.
I will sit down and I will play the first time with somebody and they'll be like, oh, cool, a game about racing, right on, that's cool. And I'll say, okay, the first time we play, we'll just play a simple one lap race, you know, nothing to it. And by the time it's halfway through that first lap, they're like, let's play something else. Yeah. And they will never come back and try like a 2 or 3 or 4 lap race.
Of course.
So I never get to play. And that's just playing the simple version. I've never ever been able to even try the more complicated version where you're tracking damage and different stats. And it just makes me so sad.
It's not fun.
But it is fun.
It's like someone said, I want to design a game that captures the spirit of racing. And then they made Formula D and forgot about their initial want of making a game that captures the spirit of racing and made a game that captures the spirit of tediousness and boredom.
No, it's a strategy game. And the tedium and boredom comes in when you're playing with people who get analysis paralysis and don't bother to learn the rules. They want to play that's a simple, casual game, and they don't take the time to learn the rules. And then you end up sitting there waiting for somebody to make a decision on what they're going to do with their car for 10 minutes.
So maybe this is a problem of theme mismatch, right? Because when people look at Formula D, they think it's a casual racing game, and it's a high strategy game, right? So That's a theme mismatch because most people that look at that, like when I looked at it, that's what I thought. Oh, it's going to be a fun little racing game. No, it's like really complicated and I'm downshifting and I'm taking damage and I don't understand that. I just want to take the corner.
I don't think it's that complicated. I think it's pretty simple.
I'm just saying for the audience that sees that, like our friend Will. Hey, Will, if you're listening, he might see that game and be like, it's about car racing. That's awesome. But I guarantee a few turns in, he'd be like, you know, this just isn't my type of game. There's so much going on here. It's just not my type of game. And everybody has different styles of games they like. I'm just saying you get a gearhead like Will that looks at the game and says, oh, that looks like a fun racing game. 9 times out of 10, when they're done, they're going to say, I was wrong. That was a racing game, but it wasn't fun.
The problem is that I'm trying to play it with people who are casual gamers.
Well,
you
and listeners, pay attention here.
Okay.
Rob is the most terrible judge of who player matching for games that I've ever met. He'll be like, I went to this party, everybody was drinking, and I brought fill in the blank of some game that's way overly complex and none of them will understand.
You've been making fun of me for bringing Drunk Quest to parties for a while, and you know what? Finally, somebody sat down and played it with me, and it was awesome. It was great, and it was one of the simplest games I've ever played, and it was a blast.
How many parties did you have to take it to do that?
About 12.
See what I mean? Player mismatch.
But if they had just tried it, it would have been great. Yeah. It's more fun.
Next time, take Redneck Life.
I'm sick of Redneck Life. It's a good game, but I'm just tired of it. Because everybody always wants to play Redneck Life, and I'm like, dude, I've played this 1,000 times already.
And that's a game where I think you run out of replayability at some point.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, it's a funny game. It's a good game. Right. It's a smart game. But it's also a very, very simple game.
Right.
And it gets boring.
And there's not like a ton of strategy to the game either. It's not like, if you have a simple game that has a ton of strategy, you know, like to where, oh, 5 minutes to learn, but a lifetime to master the strategy, that's okay. But if it's a simple game that's just a simple game, it can still be fun. It can still be a worthwhile game to play.
Yeah.
But
right
after a while, it's going to get boring.
Yeah. It's a lot like Cards Against Humanity that way. Cards Against Humanity, the first time I played it, oh, man, I went nuts for it. Second time I played it, it was even better. It was so much fun. Third time I played it, kind of boring because I knew what all the cards were already.
Right. So we've gotten way off topic here, but I do feel like we've had some conversations here. So listeners, if you have any favorite games that are just goal oriented,
sure,
no point tracking, goal oriented,
mm-hmm.
you have to save the world from King Kong or something like that. You know, tell us about those.
Right.
Give us comments. We'd love to know what your thoughts are.
Anything
that's
different, anything we might not have heard of, you know, anything that handles those kinds of ideas, maybe in unique ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us know.
All right. Well,
okay.
Why don't we move on to practicing the pitch?
We got way off topic there.
We did. But we had valid game discussions. And I just want to be clear before you practice the pitch here. You know, normally we try and be pretty positive. I feel comfortable ragging on Formula D because Rob is such a strong proponent of it.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's a big game. You know, I'm not going to hurt an indie designer's feelings by not liking their game. It sells plenty of copies. And Rob is, again, a huge fan of the game.
Really liked
it. As much as you like it, I don't like it, you know, and I have reasons that I attribute to that, like theme mismatch and that type of thing.
And you're ugly and you smell, all right?
Yes, that's the main reason.
Right.
So, I'm not saying Formula D is a bad game, but it's just not my thing. And it, unfortunately, is not a lot of people's thing. But, again, the people that are passionate about it, I had a friend in college who was passionate about that game.
Oh, yeah.
He tried to teach me, and I still hated it back then. And I gave it another chance when I started hanging out with you.
Yeah.
He is bonkers for that game. And he's like you. He's a gamer who's into strategy games, but for some reason likes car racing. And I'm actually more surprised he likes car racing than you.
I don't watch races.
No, I know, but I mean the fact that, exactly, but the fact you would like a game about that is funny to me.
It's a good game. It's a really good game, I'm telling you.
I wish it was about racing sea turtles. I would be all over that.
Well, there was that Kickstarter for the game about racing
Formula
elephants.
Formula E,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I missed out on it. I found out about too late.
That? I would try that game.
Yeah.
Because it's not about car racing.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you practice the pitch right now?
Right now?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm excited about this.
I'm going to start with a little bit of a story.
Oh, great.
Not too much of a story, though. Hey, remember Splitters?
Nope. I do. I've played that game a lot of times, and it was a lot of fun.
I liked Splitters a lot. I still like Splitters a lot. I finished, not finished, but I got Frankenstein nailed down. I got Frankenstein prototype ordered. I'm feeling really good about the way Frankenstein's Legacy is playing. I said on a couple episodes ago, it's time for me to get back to Splitters and really get that finalized, cleaned up, get it to something that I can really put in front of people and really be proud of, right? I spent more time in. I did a bunch of revisions. I did a new version. I even put some artwork, some basic artwork on the cards. Just some stuff I found online. Nothing fancy, you know. And we played it, and it was kind of boring.
It was so I enjoyed playing the game. I enjoyed the strategy, but it was kind of like Zombie Dice and Deer Dice or whatever they call it.
Yeah,
the theme, like kinda, I completely ignored the pictures on the card.
Didn't add anything at all.
Nope, I said, What is the power of this card? Mm-hmm. How many points is it worth?
Right. Wasn't really helping. Wasn't exciting. Didn't do anything to engage the player. And I was like, man, I mean, I feel like I've got something that's working here. And the game was working better than it ever did. But it just kind of felt dull.
In that, the one thing I would have said if you were going to continue with it in the current format, mm-hmm. something that may have helped was having like the big tableau in the middle with a computer interface and like you're moving stuff. At least I would have felt like we were doing something.
Yeah.
But in that game, I was like, we're playing points.
Yeah, right. And that's really
it's
all we're doing.
It's fun. Like, the mechanics are brilliant. I love the mechanics of the game.
But there was nothing engaging about it. All the cards are just, you know, plumbing fixtures.
Yep.
Basically. And that just, and once I got some artwork on there and got the game working, I kind of sat back from it and realized, man, it's kind of dull.
Right.
It's kind of dull, but I don't want to just abandon the whole concept because I feel so good about it. What else can I do? And you and I talked about this a lot, and much has happened last week when I had the brilliant idea of the sandbox game,
right.
Toys in the Sandbox. We were talking about it, and you said, what if you were shooting rockets? what if you were shooting rockets at each other, or like trying to compete with each other to try, you know, to try and knock down each other's rockets? And that kind of clicked for me. I grok that, you know, grok.
Right.
Yeah. Am I using that right?
Sure.
I hope so. Anyway, I've always been a huge fan of The Rocketeer. I love that movie.
It's a good
film. I love that movie. That's Captain America before they made a Captain America movie.
Jetpack and Nazis, dude. That's
dude,
you need.
So good. Yeah. A dude with a jetpack, and he's got that awesome jacket. The jacket is fly, man.
Yeah, I need to watch that again.
It's so, you want to borrow it? I've got it. It's yes. Take it home with you. All right. I love The Rock. I always have loved The Rocketeer since I was a little kid. I love the comic books. I love it. I love all the design, the look of that world they've created there. And I always got, I wish I could do something, but I can't just steal a licensed property, you know, right? So you brought up this rocket idea. I said, well, what if, you know, maybe rather than, you really got me excited with this rocket theme,
right.
You know,
yep.
That's in me. And I thought, well, what if rather than shooting rockets at each other, what if we were both riding on the same rocket?
Yeah.
Yeah. Two players. All right. Two players are both riding on the same rocket. And together we talked this out.
Yep.
And we got to this idea of you have two people. You have one person who is the pilot or the jockey, you know, that's steering the rocket. You know, the rocket launches and it's up to them to steer it towards the target. But just at the last second before the rocket took off, a saboteur jumped on board and he's trying to bring down the rocket and make it crash before it hits the target. So, you know, we have like these rival factions, you know, so the pilot is trying to pilot the rocket toward this guy's home, and this guy is trying to fight to save his people, you know? And so the pilot's trying to steer this rocket around, and the saboteur is trying to break stuff and make it fall out of the sky. And every now and then they just get into a fist fight, you know?
Right.
And instantly it felt a lot more dynamic. This idea, it ends up dropping that whole concept from Splitters of, you know, putting pipe fittings together to create things that drops. And what it does is it just kind of makes it about making tough decisions about, you know, what kind of a power to use with what kind of a, you know, a score.
Cause you still have to join two
cards
together.
Still like
your offset card system idea.
Right. Yeah. But, and so it makes it about making difficult choices about what to do with the cards in your hand at a given time.
Okay. And Splitters was very good at that.
I was really happy with the way that worked.
Yeah, it was just boring.
Yeah, just the theme was boring. Right. So then I kept kind of thinking, well, so you're just going to go for points? Well, that kind of feels a little artificial. So what if we did it this way? What if we made it kind of asymmetrical? So the pilot is trying to get that rocket to travel 1,000 miles. Mm-hmm. If it gets to 1,000 miles, that's close enough to its target. The pilot can leap off and parachute to the ground, and that it's too late. That rocket is going to strike and it's going to blow up and it's going to destroy the town. The wrecker. I'm calling these characters now. The pilot is called the Rocketer, and the saboteur is called the Wrecker.
Okay. Yep.
The Wrecker has to get that rocket to drop 10,000 feet in altitude.
So it would crash in the ground.
And at 10,000, by going down 10,000 feet, it's going to lose its, it's going to, not going to be able to make the target. It's going to crash, and the wrecker has time to bail out.
Right.
And survive. Right. Okay.
Maybe it crashes into a mountain.
Who knows?
There you go.
Right. It's not going to make it there.
Right.
Okay. So we kind of have asymmetrical goals now,
yep.
which means that Splitters always playing from the same deck. Now with this new game, which now I'm calling Rocket Wreckers.
Which is a great name.
Okay. Now you have to have two separate decks, which then also means you need separate powers, separate scores, separate everything. So it becomes this really asymmetrical experience. Okay. So the rocketer,
mm-hmm.
they have to travel distance. It's a rocket. You can't really turn it around.
Right.
You know? You can't. So the rocketer, It's just trying to get through turns, you know, when you combine those two cards together, instead of calling it a split, it's now called a link. Okay. Cause you're linking two cards together.
Yep.
The rocketer just has to spend links, get it out the table and discard it.
Right.
When it's discarded, the miles traveled go to your distance pile.
Right.
Okay. Once they get a total of 1,000 miles in their distance pile, they win.
Right.
Okay. The wrecker is trying to get a cumulative total of 10,000 feet on the table.
Right.
Now, they can have like an altitude reserve pile that they can put stuff in there, but they don't necessarily have to have that. Okay.
Right.
Because the idea here, again, the rocketer has to have total distance traveled.
Right.
Okay. And can never go backward. But the wrecker, he might be going up and down the whole time with that altitude. The point is he has to get down below that 10,000 feet for just one instant, and it's all over for the rocketer. Right. Okay. This is the concept. So the rocketer trying to get 1,000 miles traveled in the distance pile off to the side. The wrecker trying to get 10,000 feet total in play at any given time. Okay. So the rocketer is always trying to get links out there and get rid of them. Get it out, get rid of it. Get it out, get rid of it. Whereas the wrecker is trying to have as many things out in play at a time as possible to try and stop the rocketer from being able to discard stuff.
So, like, if the rocketer were to play a link, and then now it's the wrecker's turn, the wrecker could try and destroy that link
right.
before it was discarded, which means it's like he set it up so they would keep going, like a boost or something, and then I break it,
right.
and now you don't get to travel that extra distance.
Exactly right.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. The next thing that I was able to do then is I was able to make it because splitters, one of the great things about it is it played so quickly,
right.
You know, it was a 50 card deck. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, 25 cards per person essentially, and you're not usually didn't even go through the entire deck. And I was thinking about that. Well, if you're not even going through the whole deck when you're playing a game, I probably don't even need 50 cards.
Right.
So I was able to take each deck down to just 20 cards.
Nice.
20 cards per player. Then the next thing after that, yeah, it did some playtesting. And some of the cards were punch and kick and headbutt. You know, so that's when they actually get into a fist fight. And sometimes it kind of felt weird that by punching somebody, you can travel 200 miles.
Right.
You know? Or you punch some guy and it drops, 2,000 feet.
That at least makes more sense than them traveling.
A little bit, yeah, but it still kind of felt weird. So I thought, well, maybe you break the rules. Because when you're putting links together, you're doing stuff to the rocket. Okay? But when you're getting into a fist fight, that can just happen. You don't need to take the time to link things together. So the punch, kick, and headbutt cards are one-time use cards. You can play those without creating a link.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So on your turn, just like in splitters, you have two actions. Okay. It takes one action to play one card. All right. So if you're going to play two cards together as a link, that requires both actions to play one link.
Yep.
All right. If you don't want to put two links together or two cards together to play a link, you have two actions to spend. One action to discard a whole link. One action to discard a card from your hand and draw a new one. Or some links, when they're in play, give you extra powers you can spend an action to do.
Right.
So now on your turn, what you can do is you can play a punch to punch that guy. That's only going to take one action. You just have one action left to do something else if you want to.
And the punch then has an effect when you do it.
Basically, usually that makes them lose a link or discard something.
Or lose an action or something.
Lose an action, that kind of thing.
Cool.
Right. So that is the basic idea there, rocket wreckers. It ends up playing a lot more fast-paced.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot more dynamic. It's a lot more exciting kind of concept. It kind of feels like you're doing stuff, you know?
Right.
And I'm really, really a lot happier about it than I ever was with splitters.
Well, and I mean, just the imagery, like thinking like, we're at 1,000 feet, and it's like, I got 100 more miles to go, and he's just trying to get it out. You know what I mean? Like, that, there's action there.
Yeah.
You know, it's sexy, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
Right. Now, I'm having some balance problems. The first set that I made, the wrecker won every time. There was no way for the rocketer to win at all. Okay?
That's funny.
So I made a bunch of adjustments. The second set, now the rocketer wins 90% of the time.
Yeah, balance is tough with something like that.
So I'm working to dial that in. That's just going to be a process of trial and error and thinking it through and lots of playtesting. It's nice also that it's such a small and compact experience that I can playtest both sides myself all at the same time. You know, I just go back and forth like that.
Right.
That works really, really well. And I've never actually made a game that I was able to do that with before. So I'm really happy that I've been successful with that. So that's kind of basically the whole thing there. I'm really thrilled about it. I like where it's going, and I think this is the one. I'm going to be putting this into the Cards Against Humanity Deathmatch.
Awesome. I think it's a great, great choice for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it meets the requirements,
mm-hmm.
and it's simple. It sounds fun. I haven't got to try it yet. I cannot mm-hmm. wait to try it. It sounds like so much fun because
mm-hmm.
I really like the mechanics for splitters. And I actually enjoyed playing splitters,
mm-hmm.
but it's because I love the mechanics so much that I could look past the fact that the theme didn't matter.
Just boring. I mean, yeah. It just didn't add anything to the game. Yeah. So Rocket Wreckers. I'm really happy about it. it's going really, really well.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. So that's the whole thing. If you have any comments or suggestions or thoughts, let us know. Send us an email. Since I'm going to be submitting this to the Cards Against Humanity Deathmatch contest, obviously I will need to be making a print and play that I'm going to try and put available online. I'm not sure if I'm going to make that publicly available, but if I ever feel like I need to send it out and get some more playtesting done, I will say so on the podcast, or I will tweet about it. So, you know, watch my Twitter account @poorly_designed and stay tuned. Hopefully I'll be able to send something. It's just nice that it's such a compact thing that it'll be easy for me to send out to people.
Most definitely. I agree. I'm very excited about it.
So we're going to go ahead and move forward here. I wanted to give a couple more plugs here. We got some big events coming up that we always want to make sure we're reminding you guys about. Of course, first of all, we want to talk about Grand Con. Our good friends, Mark and Brian, with Grand Con. That's a big convention, comics and board game convention that's coming this coming September, September 20th through 22nd up in Grand Rapids. Go to grand-con.com to check it out. Jason and I are going to be there. We're going to be doing a game design panel, and you can come and meet us and play some games with us, try some of our prototypes, and we're real thrilled about that. It's going to be a good show. We also have some events at Gen Con this year that we want to remind you about. First is our Podcasting 101 panel. That's going to be on Friday at 2 p.m. The game ID for that is SEM1342722. It's going to be a panel where we'll just talk about our experiences learning how to become podcasters and kind of answer your questions. And we'll try and find a few people to join us in there, get some more expertise. We're also going to be doing a first-time game designers workshop. That'll be a Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. The game ID for that is SEM1342723. We're going to have some of our designer buddies join us for that one. We're just going to kind of talk about, the process of game design, what we do, what our process is, how we approach it, and you take questions for the audience and just see what thoughts you guys have. And we just want to try and share everything we've learned with everybody else.
That's right.
Lastly, the thing we're most excited about, of course, is our Building the Game live show. That's going to be a 2-hour extravaganza. That'll be at Gen Con on Saturday at 2 p.m. The ID for that is SEM1342720. You can look up all those IDs in the Gen Con events calendar or event schedule. We're going to do a live show, 2 hours long, maybe less, depending on technology problems. But we're going to do a whole show, record it right there live with an audience and take questions for you guys, talk about what you guys have been seeing and playing at the show so far. We're going to design a whole game from scratch right there with contributions from the audience, and we're going to have a blast, and we want you to join us. All of these events are free. There's no admission fee. You don't have to pay for a ticket. You can just show up and join us. But if you guys would please register for the events and get tickets, reserve tickets through the event calendar or the event system on GenCon.com, we'd really appreciate that. The more people we know are coming, the better prepared we're going to be. So moving on, I think Jason has some comments for us.
There are several comments. I'm going to kind of go through them fairly quickly
because
there's
do.
A lot of them. So, but we try and get them all out there. So first is from our pal, Brian LaBurge. Brian wants us to know that the blue shell is actually superior. This is back to our Mario Kart argument that started a long, long time ago. He said, you have to think long term. You have to think like you're a god. So that's his idea. He also called us out here. He said, also, where are the rules for the Legend of Chess Pitch, huh? You guys used to be cool and post those things. I want to read it. True, we used to post our pitches online. We stopped doing that for a couple reasons. One, it's fairly time consuming to write it up. And two, most people weren't reading them. We can tell on the sites from that.
Right.
And so if we ever can, we will. But in general, we don't, simply because we do say it on the show. And if you looked at it, you're probably already listening to it anyways. But if you ever have questions about those games, shoot us an email, buildingthegamepodcast.com, or a comment. And, so those
buildingthegamepodcast
are
@gmail.com.
Sorry. Yeah. Yep. That's the one. All right. Next comment is from our friend Danny Devine. He said, hey, guys, thanks for the kind words again, because we said nice stuff about him, because he's a good guy.
Yep.
Rob, I am sorry that I dissed your Duck versus Alligator game and also your Chess Legacy game. Hey, they can't all be winners, and believe me, most of mine aren't. Rob feels the same way about his. Oh, sorry, that's me. Sorry, about Rob's. If it makes you feel any better, Frankenstein's Legacy is looking beautiful so far. I saw your unboxing video and was very impressed. Jason, Explorers sounds neat. This is a much better theme for the mechanics. I agree the title isn't quite there. Naming games can be harder than it should be. He is correct. None of these are golden, but here's some ideas that maybe one of them isn't bad and will grow on you. World Explorers, Globe Getters, Treasure Trackers, Distant Treasures. And he said, it's also good to hear you're moving forward with Snowball Fight in its new form. You have a backer already. I was referring to myself. Good to know, Danny. Thank you. So thank you for that. Those are some interesting names. Every single one of them is better than Explorers.
And by leaps and bounds. So,
every single one. Next, we have a comment, just a quick comment from our friend Brian Lenz from GrandCon.
Hey!
He just said, excited that we're putting our initial game into production, and cheers on that. So I believe he's referring to Water Balloon Washout.
I believe he is.
And now we have a comment from Pavel Predke, who's a good guy who we've talked about before. He says, congratulations on over a year of podcasting. Here's to many more. Thank you for that. I wanted to comment on the mechanic of the week. I've never been a fan of dexterity games, though I've played Jenga a couple times and it was fun. I prefer my board games to make use of mind rather than dexterity, especially when I play in rather small groups of up to six people. Dexterity games are more fit for larger parties and conventions. I agree. In his opinion, I test my physical abilities, concentration, and dexterity playing tennis. I do not, because that sounds like a lot of running. he liked the re-theme for Snowball Fight, and he also liked Flip Flory's idea of making it a pie-throwing contest.
that is a great idea.
It is a great idea. Oh, Flip, you're crazy. On the other hand, some people are freaked out by clowns. Oh, Flip! And that could be marketing suicide.
Yeah.
Oh, Flip. Flip, Flip, Flip. Send Pavel Predke some pictures of you with a clown makeup on to haunt his dreams. He liked the unboxing video. He hopes it's possible to make it higher res next time. We did hear a few people say that, and we are working on that to get it higher res next time.
Yeah.
That was our first go around at it. He did think maybe the background might be a bit too busy. He gets that it's thematic, but it might be kind of hard to read. Some of that could have been the color tone that you had in there.
Yeah, but it's something that I need to keep working on, absolutely.
And he did say, too, going with high contrast can make a game feel very comic-like or out of this world. That said, the woman's face was somewhat too patchy, which was
absolutely
with the contrast. Yeah.
Yeah, we've learned, and more people have said since then, that GameCrafter tends to print pretty dark and kind of high contrast.
Right.
So I'm going to do some reordering on that. I adjusted the artwork a little bit so that it'll be hopefully print a little better.
Cool. And then he also said that it sounds like the Explorer game needs more elements that allow you to reroll or influence other people's rolls. Or you're just horrible dice players and that's what happens. But no, I do agree. I think that some more interaction with that is a really good idea.
Really good, I thought. Yeah.
And he said, good luck with our designs, and he looks forward to the next episode. Well, hey, you're listening to it.
Right.
Well, theoretically. And then one more comment.
Man,
here.
We got a lot today.
Yeah, we did. From a new listener named Justin. Well, I don't know if he's a new listener, but this is the first time I've seen Justin comment that I remember. Justin says, Tyrannosaur Attack,
yes!
Make it happen!
Yes!
He says, I'm working on a time travel game myself, but when I heard about this and how you can work against your teammates, I thought that was simple and genius. So, thank you, Justin.
Telling you, Tyrannosaur Attack, thank you, Justin. Thank you for that validation. Finally, somebody else, another genius out there, agrees with what a fabulous, wonderful idea Tyrannosaur Attack is.
I'd play the game, man. I told you I'd play the game. So that's all the comments we have for now. That was a lot this week. I'm sorry I burned through them a little fast. We just didn't want to go too long on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
okay.
Keep those comments coming.
Keep
coming. Reading them.
We love it. We appreciate it.
Normally, we don't have that many at a time, and we can spend a little more time on them. Yeah. But.
So thank you very much, one and all. And that's going to wrap us up once again.
Yes,
another episode of Building the Game, episode 55 to be specific, is coming to an end. Thank you, one and all, for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave comments on this episode at buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin, and I am @ poorly underscore designed. You can like us on Facebook and get us those 100 likes that we've been begging for so long. Please, please, please like us on Facebook. Also, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We will be eternally grateful to you for such a kind and wonderful thing. And you can come back next week because we're going to do this again. I mean,
every week
we do this. It's kind of wacky. We're generating content just for you because we love you. No, you in the blue. That's right. Good night. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
All I can hear is Jason's heavy breathing.
Okay, here we go.
Glad you pay attention to whose mic's whose.
Yeah.